Hi, I'm Rao Mentretti. This is actually my grad student's work, and it fits very well in this session. Since he was unable to come, I came over here to present it. I want to warn you, this is a very preliminary work. It just started in 2017. We did a preliminary research, and we thought we'll present it here. Rachid is the MS student, and then we have Kuang and Dr. Wu and Matthew Blair. They're from Tennessee State. They are the ones who are doing all the chemistry work. We are growing the mung beans at Alabama A&M, and Tennessee State is helping us with the fine chemical work. So just to give you a brief introduction, this mung bean is a very popular crop in Asia, and it belongs to family Fabaceae, like soybeans and such, which are legume-fixing crops. It used to be called Phacelius aureus, but now it's now called Vigna. It's moved to Vigna radiata. So a lot of local names are there in Asia. We call it green gram, golden gram, chop suey bean, and so on. And it's been grown in India since ancient times. There are references to about 5,000 years earlier. So it's currently widely grown in Southeast Asia, Africa, South America, and Australia. But apparently, according to historical data here, this was introduced in 2000 in US in 1835 as a Chickasaw pea. And now there's a growing demand. It's approximately 10 million kilograms of mung beans are being consumed annually. Out of that, 75% of mung bean are imported to the United States. Estimated annual mung bean production in the US is only about 5,000 hectares. Most of it is produced in Oklahoma, California, and Texas. It's a multiple use crop in India. When we grew up there, we used to see mung bean as a short season cover crop. Between harvests, they would plant a mung bean to enrich the soil with nitrogen. And even if you take it to maturity, it's usually 60 to 90 day crop. And it's a low maintenance crop, absolutely no fertilization or anything required for that. And also fairly drought tolerant, grow it in marginal soils. fits very well, particularly between vegetable production and the fall crop. There's a short season there, and again between harvesting the fall crops and planting these spring crops, summer crops, it's a window for planting mung bean as a. It can be used as a green manure. You can just harvest the green pods. Green pods are also cooked as a vegetable in Asian countries. So highly packed with a lot of nutrients. And if you take it to maturity, you can harvest the grain, and grain have a lot more uses. So I just briefly put here a lot of food soups, salads, curries, even sweets, ice creams. A lot of bean products are there in the markets now, and also they are getting into cosmetics and so on. As a whole country, they have covered it with mung bean seed. Okay, probably Taiwan, I guess. Yeah. So the reason why it's a health food crop is it's packed with a lot of minerals and vitamins, and high in calcium, phosphorus, potassium, and other vitamins. And it's also been used in a lot of medicinal uses, particularly anti-diabetic. A lot of people with diabetes who do not consume cereals make preparations with mung bean and consume that. It's a rich source of protein and low in lipids and sugars. So now we have a growing population of health-conscious Americans. They are looking for some good nutritious snacks and so on, and mung bean fits very well with that, and it's gaining popularity as a sprouted bean. Okay, this is like I said, it's a very preliminary study. Since they are single row crops, not replicated, we didn't do any statistics on them. So I'm just going to present just some preliminary data came out. We had two objectives. One was to assess growth and seed yield of 5 mung bean varieties in North Alabama. Also determine changes in crude protein, lipid, mineral, phytic acid, flavonoids, and condensed tannins in seeds and also sprouts to see the change, what happens from seed when you sprout it, because sprouts are the ones that are being consumed in the U.S. So these are some of the varieties that we procured. There's three Chinese varieties. One of them is considered as organic Chinese variety. Then we had one from India and one from Tennessee has a breeding program, and they provided one of their lines. We used organic production systems. We just used chicken manure and vermicompost to give about 25 kilograms per hectare of nitrogen. And we prepared raised beds, covered that with plastic with a drip tape, and then fed it with fish emulsion manure, soluble fertilizer on a biweekly basis. And these are just the single row plots in organic system, so we had some issues with grasses. Of course, they were now cleaned up. We had some funding from the Alabama Department of Agriculture, just about $25,000, and the person came to just check the research. So this is a sprouting procedure. It just soaked the seed overnight at about 63°F, and then drained that next day and tied up in a cheesecloth, and that they let the process continue for just for 2 days. And the student then he counted the sprouted beans day 2 and day 3 and recorded the percentage sprouting in these different varieties. Also stored the material in sprouted beans in -20°C for the other. So elemental analysis was basically done by using ICP spectrophotometer, and then we did the phytochemical analysis using some of the published methods out there for phytic acid, and phytic acid is a two-step process, and then flavonoid contents, and then protein, lipid, and moisture content. We just send the samples out to Oregon State, and they determine that for us. Okay. So this is on a per plant basis, found that Indian variety was really very poor yielding, whereas organic, Chinese organic did much better. Crop grew very well, it does pretty good in our environments, and we think it has a lot of potential. We looked at the number of pods, the pod weight, seed yield, and also 100 seed weight. So it's a little lower than soybean. Soybean generally 10 to 11 grams, 100 seed weight, but in this case about 6-7 seeds are fairly small. So the sprouting, also there were differences among the varieties. Since these are single rows, we really don't know the statistical significance, but we just saw that there is some variation among the varieties for their sprouting percentages. Okay. So mineral content, they were very high in calcium, and one line showed very high levels of aluminium. We think it's just noise. We want to recheck that and see if it's really high in aluminium content. And then very high in potassium. And we looked at the differences between the seed, the sprouted fresh, and also we dried the sprouted beans and also checked their mineral content. So protein, generally known for, it's about 22 to 24% protein in mung beans. There's a lot of varietal variation for that. It can vary anywhere from 18 to about 26, 28. In our case, we found about 23, 24%. Again, there was some variation among the varieties for their protein content. And not really consistent differences among between the seed and the sprouted bean as far as protein is concerned. But when it comes to oil, there's a significant, this could be significant, we didn't do analysis, but if you see here, a considerable reduction in oil content. So it's a good, healthy snack, high protein, low oil. and then looked at the total flavonoid, again some variation among the varieties, and generally lower in the case of, there's no consistent trend between the seed and the sprouted beans. Okay. Phytic acid, there is some consistency in reduction in phytic acid, and tannins, very considerable reduction. Now, phytic acid and tannins are considered as anti-nutritional because they tie up phosphorus in the seed, and the bioavailability of phosphorus is much reduced. So this is a good sign that when you sprout the beans, the anti-nutrition factors are actually reduced. So there is some varietal differences for sprouting and also for growth and yield, and also particularly reduction in phytic acid and tannins. Okay. So this year we planted 10 germplasm lines, were recommended by Virginia State. The person has already evaluated in Virginia, and out of 40 lines, he said this 10 did pretty good. So we got the seed. But the problem with this is they give like 10 seeds per packet. So we are trying to select. We selected about 3 varieties from this already for early flowering and maturity. And we're going to conduct some replicated trials next year. And also we're looking at some on-farm trials. We are already talking with some farmers to increase the seed and look how mung bean is accepted by the farmers. It's not very easy because the seed is not really being, cannot be sold, marketed here. But sprouted beans have a very good market. But then whoever grows it should find somebody who can sprout these beans and then package and sell. It's a different ball game and not very easy to do it. So those are some of the challenges as we go with this new crop. Thank you very much. Yes.
Did you see any variation, did you see any genetic by environment interaction? Since you mentioned that one faculty in Virginia State already tested some variety.
Yeah, actually in Virginia they did much better. Here, on another challenge we have in our place is early frost. Sometimes we get the frost end of October, November, and so the crop seed, dry seed is an issue. If you leave the mature parts a little long, then we can lose it to frost damage. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, here sprouts are much easier to get the consumers to accept. But there are so many mung bean products out there already, mung bean noodles and flours and so on. But we are aiming at sprout industry. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.